Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl.
It feels really good to be back in the studio and producing a new show this week. On today's show, I'll be sharing some updates on the 9/11 truth movement, and then we'll be taking a look at the alleged coronavirus pandemic and the various players and agendas behind it. And please don't take my word for any of it. I'll be giving you websites, articles, and videos where you can check out for yourself and do your own research. I encourage you to do that and make up your own mind. I'm providing you with an alternative view to the government and mainstream media, who have had a long history of lying to us in the past about nearly every aspect of 9/11, Iraq being connected to 9/11, the non-existent weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, the anthrax attacks, the chemical attacks in Syria, the white helmets, who's funding and supplying ISIS, and the list goes on. So it's no surprise to me at all that they may be misrepresenting or omitting the evidence and facts concerning the COVID-19 virus. Now, I want to state up front, I'm not saying that the virus doesn't exist, that people aren't getting sick from it or dying from it. But beyond that, there's a lot to this story. It's actually quite large. I don't even know where to begin with this, but there's a lot of backstory here, and that's what we're going to take a look at. And then we will take a look at how the government has responded to the virus. So let's begin with the 9/11 updates. As many of you already know, there was a 4-year study conducted at the University of Alaska at Fairbanks on the collapse of World Trade Center 7. The 47-story building that collapsed in just under 7 seconds on 9/11 and that wasn't hit by a plane. The study results were that World Trade Center 7 came down by controlled demolition and not by fire, as the government claims. The architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth have produced a film about World Trade Center 7 and this new study. The film is targeted for release in September of this year to coincide with the 19th anniversary of 9/11. Here's a short trailer from the film, and the film is called 7.
You didn't hear anything about the World Trade Center 7, not for a long time. And we'd never experienced, prior to that day, a steel frame building collapsing due to fire. It just didn't happen.
There was no excuse for rushing to remove debris from Building 7. There was quick decisions made about taking that evidence away. They only saved one piece of steel, and that piece of steel suffered some extreme temperatures.
Fire cannot cause that. There are other chemicals that were involved.
And the next guy you're going to hear in this trailer is Shyam Sunder. He's the guy that was in charge of investigating the collapse of World Trade Center 7 for the government, and he worked at NIST, the National Institute for Standards and Technology.
We did not find any evidence that explosives were used in the collapse of Building 7.
They ignored evidence, and it wasn't because they didn't know about it.
They seem to focus on a solution right from the very beginning and ignore all evidence that would have led them in any other direction. There was just this silence in the academic world about this subject. So we began looking around for someone that would be willing to undertake such a study. We ran across Professor Halsey up at the University of Alaska at Fairbanks. He was very scientific about the way he approached this whole problem.
He wants to look at things from a very rational perspective, blocking all the noise out, which is really what is needed in this case.
If there is controversy, that means that not everyone's satisfied with the answer. If we can change that, if we can give the public and the engineers an understanding of truly what did happen, it's worth it to me to be able to do that work.
Based on the study on World Trade Center 7, known as the Halsey Report, on April 15, 2020, architects and engineers, 88 architects and structural engineers, and 10 family members of 9/11 victims submitted a request for correction to NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology. The request for correction comprises more than 100 pages and 5 exhibits, and covers 8 separate items of information that it says violate the agency's information quality standards. Only if NIST revises its, quote, probable collapse sequence, unquote, effectively reversing its conclusion that fires caused the building's destruction, can it correct these violations, the request contends. NIST has until August 13, 2020, to provide an initial decision on this request for correction. NIST so far has responded, stating that the request is under review. To read the request for correction or learn more about the Halsey Report and to sign their petition for a new investigation into 9/11, go to the website ae911truth.org. They could use your support. Now, this is where we're going to segue from 9/11 to the COVID-19 virus. Now, the Project for a New American Century, or PNAC, a neocon organization, called for a new Pearl Harbor to get the American people to buy into their militaristic plans, and then conveniently along came 9/11. In that same document, called Rebuilding America's Defenses, they stated the following, quote, combat will likely take place in new dimensions, in space, cyberspace, and perhaps the world of microbes, advanced forms of biological warfare that can target specific genotypes, may transform biological warfare from the realm of terror to a politically useful tool. These neocons at the Project for a New American Century were calling for U.S. full-spectrum dominance of the world. 9/11 moved them closer in that direction in their efforts to try and take over the Middle East and destroy any countries that had the oil wealth and ability to be independent nations. Along with the goal to dominate the world and have a one-world government, there seems to be a goal to also have population reduction, and more on that later. And again, if you doubt me on any of this, please do your own research. You can go to YouTube and do a search for one-world government or the New World Order, and you should get a list of videos of prominent politicians discussing it. And if you're wanting to know more about the depopulation plans, you can start out by looking up Bill Gates or Father Bill Gates and eugenics. But again, more on that later. Now, if you've been listening to this show in the past, you know that drills often precede or accompany events like 9/11, the Boston Marathon bombing, the London 7/7/2005 bombings, and many other events. The anthrax attacks that came immediately after 9/11 were preceded by a drill called Dark Winter. The Dark Winter drill was conducted from June 22nd to June 23rd, 2001, at Andrews Air Force Base. It involved a scenario where terrorists released smallpox viruses via aerosol spray in 3 American cities, beginning in early December 2002. So we had the Dark Winter drill of a bioweapon attack in June of 2001, and 4 months later we actually had a bioweapons attack that resembled the drill in many ways. And then in October of 2019, we had a drill called Event 201 that involved the coronavirus. And the really interesting part is that many of the same participants in the Dark Winter drill were involved in the Event 201 coronavirus drill. There were also several bioweapons drills throughout 2019 called Crimson Contagion. Journalist Whitney Webb has written a series of 3 articles under the title Engineering Contagion, and I'm going to read parts of that right now. It's an excellent series of articles, and I really recommend that you check her out. She does great, great in-depth research. So the first of the series is called All Roads Lead to Dark Winter. And I'm just going to read parts of this. Quote, the leaders of 2 controversial pandemic simulations that took place just months before the coronavirus crisis, Event 201 and Crimson Contagion, shared a common history, the 2001 biowarfare simulation Dark Winter. Dark Winter not only predicted the 2001 anthrax attacks, but some of its participants had clear foreknowledge of those attacks. Upon further investigation, key leaders of both Event 2001 and Crimson Contagion not only have deep and long-lasting ties to U.S. intelligence and the U.S. Department of Defense, they were all previously involved in that same June 2001 exercise, Dark Winter. Some of these same individuals would also play a role in the FBI's sabotaged investigation into the subsequent anthrax attacks and are now handling major aspects of the U.S. government's response to the COVID-19 crisis. One of those individuals, Robert Cadleck, was recently put in charge of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services' entire COVID-19 response efforts, despite the fact that he was recently and directly responsible for actions that needlessly infected Americans with COVID-19. Other major players in Dark Winter are now key drivers behind the biodefense mass surveillance programs currently being promoted as a technological solution to COVID-19 spread, despite evidence that such programs actually worsen pandemic outbreaks. Others still have close connections to the insider trading that recently occurred among a select group of U.S. senators regarding the economic impact of COVID-19 and are set to personally profit from lucrative contracts to develop not just one, but the majority of experimental COVID-19 treatments and vaccines currently under development by U.S. companies. One of these participants in both Dark Winter, Event 201, and Crimson Contagion is Jerome Hauer. He was the managing director of Kroll, Inc. on 9/11, and Kroll was responsible for security at the World Trade Center complex on 9/11. Kroll has been accused of being a CIA front, and Jerome Hauer was conveniently not in his office in the World Trade Center on 9/11. He's also the guy that warned the Bush White House prior to the anthrax attacks to start taking Cipro. There were also some key players in the 2001 Dark Winter drills and the 2019 Crimson Contagion and Event 201 simulation from Johns Hopkins Center for Civilian Biodefense Strategies. So that's of interest, but more on that later. I do want to encourage you to check out Whitney Webb's series of articles on this topic. You'll gain a great deal of knowledge and understanding of what's really going on. And you can get to those articles by going to the website thelastamericanvagabond.com. And again, that's thelastamericanvagabond.com. There's lots of other great information there. And once you're on the site, click on where it says Web Series. It's near the top of the page, and those articles will come up. There's so much research being done about the many aspects of the coronavirus and the real background story, and we'll get to many of them in future broadcasts. But now I want to switch to the government's response to the coronavirus for the rest of the time on today's show, since this is affecting all of our lives in the present moment. So let's start by looking at the testing. So we're going to start with an article written by Julian Rose and posted on the great website globalresearch.ca, and it was posted on June 29th of 2020, and its title is Manufactured Pandemic, Testing People for Any Strain of a Coronavirus, Not Specifically for COVID-19. And so here goes. I work in the healthcare field. Here's the problem. We are testing people for any strain of a coronavirus, not specifically for COVID-19. There are no reliable tests for a specific COVID-19 virus. There are no reliable agencies or media outlets for reporting numbers of actual COVID-19 virus cases. This needs to be addressed first and foremost. Every action and reaction to COVID-19 is based on totally flawed data, and we simply cannot make accurate assessments. This is why you're hearing that most people with COVID-19 are showing nothing more than cold, flu-like symptoms. That's because most coronavirus strains are nothing more than cold, flu-like symptoms. The problem is the test is known not to work. And Julian Rose, the author of this article, is not the only one saying the tests don't work. I woke up this morning and on the front page of the Waterbury Republican American newspaper saw this headline. It said, 90 false positives reported. Flaw at state's health lab led to incorrect test results over the past month. And in the article it says, quote, the public health lab uncovered a flaw last Wednesday in one of the testing systems it uses to detect the novel coronavirus that led to 90 out of 144 people tested from June 15th to July 17th receiving a false positive test report. They go on to say later in the article, the number of false positive tests could be higher than the 90 that the Department of Public Health reported because it is not known how many other testing labs in Connecticut used the same diagnostic test. So 90 out of 144 is a pretty large percentage of false positives. And if you think about it, I mean, there's been a lot of other research and articles stating that these tests are not accurate and there's a lot of false positives, and then they're labeling people who turn out negative positive anyway, and or people who simply have symptoms and aren't tested, they label as coronavirus cases. So the whole testing and the case numbers are totally inaccurate and flawed. And how do you base the response, the extreme response of our government using this flawed data in lockdowns that put a lot of people out of business, that people are committing suicide, turning to more addiction, et cetera, to survive this? And one of the things that's being forced on us all based on this faulty data is the wearing of face masks. And think about it. If we didn't wear face masks, the whole coronavirus issue wouldn't be so much in the forefront and in our face and creating more fear in us. They're a constant reminder that, ooh, be afraid, there's this terrible virus out there and that we can't even trust each other and that we could all infect each other and, ooh, keep your distance. And to think that it's all based on faulty testing is mind-blowing to me. So we're going to hear right now from Ben Swan, who discusses the research on the effectiveness of the face masks. Forget about whether they're actually needed because of the faulty testing, but just whether they're effective or not. So here he is, Ben Swan. From a video you can find on YouTube called Reality Check, Why Face Masks Don't Work According to the Science. And here it is.
The war over face masks. Yes, in our highly politicized climate, it seems like everybody has to be on some kind of team against everybody else. This latest example is whether or not you are for wearing a face mask or you're against it. On one side, those who are for it say by not wearing a face mask, you're putting their life at risk and being selfish. On the other side, those who say that by being forced to wear one, their freedom is being stolen from them. Now, can we set all of that aside for just a minute? Set aside your preconceived notions. What does science say? What do the facts say about face masks? Do they actually make us safer? Do they actually prevent the spread of viruses? The facts right now. I'm Ben Swan, and this is Truth in Media. Guys, welcome to the show. So across the country, it seems very simple. Everyone is fighting over this issue of face masks right now. In fact, in the state of Michigan, Governor Gretchen Whitmer has issued an executive order that tells businesses they must force customers to wear a face mask. And if they don't, the owner of that business could lose their license to operate in the state of Michigan. All over the country, we're seeing signs, people saying you must wear a face mask. Governors are mandating it. And even President Trump himself wore a face mask at a Navy hospital recently. It is all anyone talks about right now. And as I said, there are very strong feelings about this issue, as with everything else. But if we set aside feelings and we just look at facts, what do the facts say about wearing a face mask? What does science say about face masks and whether or not they prevent the spread of viruses like COVID-19? Believe it or not, there have been a number of studies that have been done over the past decade. One in 2009, 2010, 2012, 2016, 2017, 2019, and yes, even this year in 2020. A number of controlled studies have been done that look at this very issue, whether or not wearing medical face masks with N95 respirators in them, and whether or not wearing cloth masks actually reduce the risk of a virus. So what did each of these studies find? Well, actually, they all found the very same thing. Now, these were studies that looked at N95 respirator masks. That's not the same thing as just hanging a piece of cloth over your face or creating your own mask at home. We'll get to that in a minute. But let's start with the most scientific and medically advanced mask, the N95 respirator mask. These studies, controlled studies, took a look at those N95 respirator masks and whether or not they prevent the spread of virus. Here's what they found. For the study in 2019, among 2,862 randomized participants, 2,371 completed the study and accounted for 5,180 HCW healthcare workers seasons. Among outpatient healthcare personnel, N95 respirators versus medical masks, as worn by participants in this trial, resulted, get this, in no significant difference in the incidence of laboratory-confirmed influenza. Did you get that? In the 2019 study, there was no significant difference by wearing an N95 respirator mask. It happened again in 2020. Look at this one. A total of 6 RCTs involving 9,171 participants were included. There were no statistically significant differences in preventing laboratory-confirmed influenza, laboratory-confirmed respiratory viral infections, laboratory-confirmed respiratory infection, and influenza-like illness using N95 respirators and surgical masks. By the way, just to be clear, in the 2009, 2010, 2012, 2016, and 2017 studies, they all found the very same thing as the 2019 and 2020 studies. Again, all of these are RTCs, randomized control tests, that are essentially set up to determine whether or not these N95 respirator masks help to prevent the spread of viruses in this setting. And all of these studies found that they do not. Statistically, they do not. Now, there's another study that was also done in 2020. It was done by a group of researchers in Hong Kong. The study was conducted just before COVID-19 hysteria took over, and the results of it were released just a few weeks ago. And once again, those researchers found the very same thing, that there was, in fact, no statistical reason to believe that face masks will protect you, but improper use of a face mask actually puts you at greater risk of contamination. Look at this. In pooled analysis, we found no significant reduction in influenza transmission with the use of face masks. Our systematic review found no significant effect of face masks on transmission of laboratory-confirmed influenza. Proper use of face masks is essential because improper use might increase the risk for transmission. And there is more here because remember, over and over we've been told something else that's pretty significant. We have been told that you must wear a face mask when you go out. And these N95 respirator masks are obviously the very best thing to wear, right? Which, as we're seeing, is not true because those N95 respirator masks don't really protect you from transmitting and catching a virus. However, we're also being told that if you don't have an N95 respirator mask, which, by the way, the vast majority of people walking around in face masks do not have, they're not wearing N95 respirator masks. They're just wearing a cloth mask over their face. And what we've been told over and over is that if you just wear a cloth mask over your face, it's better than nothing, so you should do that. And so because of that, we have tens of millions of people walking around with cloth masks on their face. Now get this. In 2015, there was actually a study done taking a look at medical masks versus just a cloth mask and whether or not wearing a cloth mask would protect against the spread of a virus. And what that study found in 2015 should alarm you. Not only does wearing a cloth mask not prevent the spread of a virus, it actually can put you at greater risk for catching the virus. Look at this. According to researchers, this study is the first RCT of cloth masks, and the results caution against the use of cloth masks. This is an important finding to inform occupational health and safety. Moisture retention, reuse of cloth masks, and poor filtration may result in increased risk of infection. Further research is needed to inform the widespread use of cloth masks globally. However, as a precautionary measure, cloth masks should not be recommended for HCWs, that's healthcare workers, particularly in high-risk situations, and guidelines need to be updated. So for those of you who are watching who are doubting all of this, please show me your RCTs, your randomized control tests that demonstrate how using an N95 respirator mask actually prevents the spread of a virus. I would love to see it. If you're watching this and you say, well, a cloth mask is better than nothing because I heard some reporter on television say so, or I heard some official with the NIH just announce that this is true, please show me the randomized controlled test that verifies that that is true. Because in 2015, that study was done that looked at cloth masks and found not only does it not protect you, it can actually put you at risk. And this is very important information because we are hearing over and over from executives around the country, meaning governors and state leaders and mayors across the country, that you must wear a face mask to protect yourself and to protect others. And to not do so is an act of selfishness. And what they're telling you to do, according to these scientific studies, is to actually put yourself at greater risk. You're not protecting the population, you're actually putting yourself at risk. So we know that with the cloth masks, that study shows that you put yourself at greater risk. And let's go even deeper on this, because the reality is that by wearing an N95 respiratory mask, again, there are other health issues aside from virus that can come up. The reality is wearing a face mask, not just for people with compromised immune systems, but wearing a face mask on a regular basis is unhealthy for you. And there are multiple studies that show that. The N95 mask, which filters out 95% of particles because it impairs respiratory exchange or breathing to a greater degree than a soft mask, and is more often associated with headaches. In one such study, researchers surveyed 212 healthcare workers, 47 males and 165 females, asking about presence of headaches with N95 mask use, duration of the headaches, type of headaches, and if the person had pre-existing headaches. They found that about a third of the workers developed headaches with the use of the mask. Most had pre-existing headaches that were worsened by mask wearing, and 60% required pain medications for relief. As to the cause of the headaches, while straps and pressure from the mask could be causative, the bulk of the evidence points towards hypoxia and or hypercapnia as the cause. That is, a reduction in blood oxygenation or an elevation in blood CO2. It is known that the N95 mask, if worn for hours, can reduce blood oxygenation as much as 20%, which can lead to a loss of consciousness. There's another danger to wearing these masks on a daily basis, especially if you're wearing it for several hours. When a person is infected with a respiratory virus, they will expel some of that virus with each breath. But if you're wearing a mask, especially an N95 mask, you're breathing back in the virus every time you attempt to expel it. Now, as I say these things, there are those who are going to watch and say, well, that's simply not true. That's not true. You're wearing a mask is not worse for you, it's better for you. And you're not saying that based on science. You're not saying that based on scientific evidence. You're saying it because it's what you're being told over and over and over again in the media, and by politicians, and by these doctors who are in positions that are political positions, not in medical positions. And over, they're repeating this to you. And by the way, even the biggest doctor of them all in this country, Dr. Anthony Fauci, who keeps talking about this issue, referred to wearing a face mask as mostly symbolic. Listen to his words. He called it mostly symbolic. So why is it that everyone's being required to wear one? And this is what you need to know. The reality is, number one, wearing an N95 face mask does not prevent the spread of virus. Number two, wearing a cloth mask does not prevent the spread of virus, but can lead to a greater chance for infection from a virus. And number three, if you have other health conditions, N95 masks can actually make it worse. Now, here's what that all means. It means that this talk of protecting you from a virus with a mask is not based in science. I've shown you the science. It's not based in science or fact. And if it's not, then is wearing a face mask really about protecting the public? Or does it become about submission of the public? Are we being forced to submit merely because politicians want us to? Again, if Fauci calls wearing a face mask mostly symbolic, then let's stop dealing with things that are symbolism and deal in medicine.
You can find this video and see the research articles he's referencing by going to YouTube and typing in Ben Swan, and Swan with two N's, and masks. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.